bad movies be forgot and never brought to mind. Kevin Feige is a great guy. Man. Love that guy.
Love that
old lang syne. Brilliant.
Oh, wow. My. I'm sorry, everybody.
Welcome to 2020.
Yeah. Boom. 2020, the year of that. All of that, all year.
Can't over get copyright claimed on podcasts. Or can you? Uh-oh.
What's everyone? What's up, everyone?
What's everyone?
This is the Carpool Critics Podcast. It's a movie podcast, and today we're discussing each of our top three best movies of the 2010s. The Roaring Tens.
Is that what they're called?
No.
They're probably more than top three, but I forced myself to pick three, but I just love movies so much.
What I want to know is, David, how much time did you spend picking your top three?
I spent a lot of time. Last night, I probably spent like 2-3 hours making a list of all the movies that I liked that I thought were above nines.
David.
And then I whittled it down, and then now I got my top three.
And you're serious, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm really happy that you did that.
Just like does it in his spare time. That was exactly my approach as well. Except I probably have a longer list than you. Look.
Ah, spoil.
Wow. Oh,
okay. At least it's organized by year.
James visibly recoiled.
At first, I was like, that's way too many. But then I saw that you had it by year. There's like 2 or 3 per year. Like, okay, maybe you are a little more organized than I am.
Well, I'm not a complete idiot.
Okay, here's what I want. Okay. I had an idea. I thought maybe what we should do, see who has the best taste, like the best top three.
Oh, wait. So we have to pick our top three, and then we have to pick which out of three have the best top three?
No, you pick your top three, and then you defend your top three, and the audience will hit us up on social media, and they'll decide who has the best top three. But
community interaction.
Here's the thing I'm afraid of is that given that like criteria and the way that the game works, that you're going to pick a top three that's like super mainstream just so you get the likes.
I already picked our top three.
That's not what I did.
You did. Yeah. David
I already picked it.
You did.
They're highlighted.
Oh, great.
So in green.
You're the only cheater here.
No, mine are bold, baby.
Mine are in green.
I'm not going to win the popular vote for sure, but whatever. People with taste will like me.
Okay, so
should we do three at once or like 1-1-1, 1-1-1, 1-1-1?
Oh,
I think we should do 1-1-1.
1-1-1, 1-1-1.
Sure.
All right, David, you start.
I'm gonna start us off.
With your third. That's another thing. Is your top three like a 1, 2, 3?
They're not in particular order. They're just best representations of the best movies of the decade.
I thought you loved categorizing things. You should just go pick your least favorite one.
It's impossible. Least favorite?
It's impossible.
It's impossible. Wait, I can't do it. Oh, yeah. I'm going to start with Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
What the
wow.
F?
That wasn't even on my list
at all. Wait, that's not a sequel, right? There's only one.
There's only one.
That's first one, Scott Pilgrim.
I mean, I saw it once. I barely remember it.
I was close to putting that one on my like overall list of notable movies, but I think like I don't know. It was mostly interesting visually.
It's got an interesting story. The editing's awesome.
Who directed it?
Edgar Wright. It's one of his best movies. It's still got heart, but it has so much style. It's so fun. It's kinetic. It's moving. Mm. It's got like all the nerd references you want. It's got good humor. It's just such a fun movie. It's endlessly rewatchable. The more you rewatch it, like the more you uncover. It's maybe the most dense Edgar Wright movie. Mm. And it's just like a good time. There's a few things that aren't perfect about it. Like I think the ending being changed from the book is like maybe a mistake, but I love it. I just want to tell the story of the first time I watched it.
You're just looking at his face and his tone of voice. He's like, it's basically like, okay, everyone in the room strap in. Here we go. David, okay, I don't want to insult you, David, but I feel like if I look back at that movie, which I watched like when it came out, this is even in the 2010s?
2010.
Okay, 2010.
Barely made it.
It's in the same category of goodness to me as like the movie Kick-Ass.
It's better than Kick-Ass. Kick-Ass almost made my like shortlist, but it has like fundamental emotional flaws, where Scott Pilgrim is like perfect for what it's trying to do. There's like a few moments, I think like one of the boss fights is kind of weak in that, but for like this visual novel brought to life, unbeatable. It's unmatched. There's no movie like it. And that's something one of the reasons I chose it, that it's so unique in its presentation. There's no other movie like Scott Pilgrim.
You know what I'm dying to know? What was it like the first time you watched it?
Oh, okay.
Ecstatic.
So I actually went to this movie on a double date, and I went with a friend.
You date two girls at one time.
No, me and my friend, we were with two girls, and we weren't like officially dating. It was just like whatever, friends going. And my friend liked one girl, and I liked the other girl, but they kind of reverse liked us. So it was like the wrong way.
What does this have to do with a movie?
That sounds
David?
Like a good movie.
But at the end of the movie, The girl that like liked me, but I didn't like, was totally in agreement that that was one of the coolest movies I'd ever seen. And the girl that I liked didn't like it. Oh. And that's how I knew she was not the one.
It was a taste maker. Yeah.
What a twist. This is great.
That's interesting.
Write the screenplay.
I think I agree overall with you, David, not you, James, that I think it's way better than Kick-Ass. Kick-Ass was like...
It's pretty good.
Throwaway movie. Like, it was kind of cool where it was like kind of a subversion of the superhero movies that we were getting at the time. But as a movie, it wasn't very good.
Whereas I'm just saying to
Scott
me,
Pilgrim,
like
delivered.
I'm sure if I watch them both now, I have way more strong opinions about them. But to me, they occupy the space in my brain where it's like, hey, remember that movie? It was a whole new property and you went to see it and it was like, wow, that was actually pretty good. It's like they're both like A-minus movies in the memory of 10 years ago.
Yeah, I guess so. I think I would put Kick-Ass at like...
B plus.
Yeah, maybe a B plus.
Yeah.
Barely a B plus.
Scott Pilgrim is well worth a rewatch. It's better on rewatches because there's the humor's really dense and like there's joke. And like the first time you watch it, you only catch like joke one and joke four.
Yeah.
And the more you watch it, the more you're getting the levels of jokes. It's great.
Also, just from like a world building perspective, they like added all these like video game mechanics into real life and you're just like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
I think it was, I mean, maybe it wasn't the first movie, but it's the first movie in my memory that kind of like added in these sort of like video game augmented reality things that we saw later in some movies.
So Riley, what's your
my first pick?
Number three? Looking at your list of 50 movies, I thought it was highlighted, pal.
So wait, and this doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if this is like the third best or whatever. We're just going with it's one of my picks.
No, but give us your third
2014's best. Whiplash.
Oh,
yeah.
Great movie.
It's really good.
I'm more artsy than you.
I'm a musician. Everyone at this table plays instruments. David used to be paid to play music.
I got paid one time.
I get paid to stop.
yeah, Whiplash. Excellent acting showcase for both Miles Teller and J.K. Simmons, I think. Yep, that's his name. That's primarily what it was. The story was... interesting enough to kind of serve the amazing direction, cinematography, acting in that movie. And it really takes you on an emotional journey. And yeah, I loved it. Did you guys see it?
Yeah, I thought it was fantastic. Like, you don't get too many movies that are just, well, about drumming ever. But it's one of those movies that everyone can relate to. Anyone who's ever been obsessed with anything, whether you're like a martial artist or a programmer or whatever, just being super obsessed and trying to be like the top.
Right.
That's awesome for that. And that dude... what's the name of the actor that he was like Spider-Man's boss?
J.K. Simmons.
J.K.
That's,
Simmons.
Yeah, that guy's wicked. He's so good at being bad.
And I think we've seen him play like kind of like sort of gruff characters before that movie. But this was the first one I think that I saw him where he was like actually scary.
Yeah.
Oh, he's
I was
full
like,
on.
Ah, geez. He like kicked the guy out of the band for like getting a wrong note or something. Mm-hmm. And
but that guy wasn't even the guy who was out of tune. He just didn't know whether he was out of
tune. He only did
that
as a point, to make a point. Man, see, I don't remember a ton about these movies. I remember the impression that I had after watching it. And I was just like, after watching that one, I was like, whoa.
What was that director's next breather. Thing?
La La Land.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's right.
Which was, eh.
I like La La Land.
Uh-oh. Is that
I'm not going to sit here and fight here. I think Moonlight was a better movie of that year than La La Land. Mm. But I love
the biggest Oscar upset of the year.
Yeah.
Oh.
The worship of old Hollywood, the color, the style. The music's good. There's lots of stuff
that
to like.
That opening number.
Yeah, it's all right. But I think Whiplash is better.
Yeah, I'd rather rewatch Whiplash.
Same. All right. That's all I have to say about Whiplash. James?
I'm going to go with The Artist.
Nice.
You remember when that came
out? Yeah, it's an awesome movie.
See, I haven't seen it.
Dude, that movie came out, it was crazy. This movie is in black and white. It's a silent movie.
Oh, really?
It's a silent movie, but it's about the decline of silent movies getting replaced by talkies. And so it follows an actor who is like the biggest silent movie actor as his career declines, and then talkies come in. Mm. And this like actress that he kind of brings up into silent movies, she jumps ship and goes into talkies, right? And like her career rises as he falls.
Declining.
And it's just awesome. You've probably never seen a silent movie unless you're like weird and went to film school like David or something.
I was gonna say, I'm like, yeah, I've seen silent films.
but so it's like a more artsy Singing in the Rain.
It's actually not that artsy. That's what's like incredible about it. It's not pretentious. It's just charming. Even if you're like, whatever, I don't like black and white movies. I don't like silent movies. You'll be like, I really like these characters. I like what's going on. Like,
this
it's
is so boring.
Engaging. No, it moves.
They're
really
magnetic.
Yeah, it's
like
so,
that lead
so
actor's
good.
Smile is just like, fantastic. Ooh. That guy is so lovable.
I want to get a room with him.
Yep. There's a scene where the woman, she really admires this actor, right? Mm. She's in his dressing room or something waiting, and his coat is on like a mannequin, and she sees it, and she kind of like starts like flirting with it and dancing with it, and she puts one arm into the jacket of the suit and starts, you know, when you like, if I turn around and like grab my and grope myself, it looks like I'm hugging myself. She does like a little thing like that, and it's like, so it's just amazingly well done.
Okay,
it's well worth a watch.
From like the visual perspective primarily, or like, well, I guess it's a silent film.
There's music and sound effects, so they kind of cheat a little bit where they have sound effects.
There's sound effects.
It's very subtle. And it's kind of for key moments, like add a little bit of ambience or they'll do that. But it's always invisible. It's like...
Are there like the text plates that come up?
Sometimes.
Really?
They just right?
Up. They cover the whole screen?
No. Yeah, sometimes. Yeah. But it's stylistically used in different ways where sometimes you get a sense just from the visuals of what's going on. Sometimes they say specifically what they're saying. Sometimes it's like, they're very clever in how they keep the movie moving in terms of style.
But if like someone walks into an apartment and opens the door and closes it, you'll hear the door open and close?
Not always. It's only for like an emotional moment or like a reveal or something where they'll use that as a tool to tell the story.
So they kind of like use it as an point of emphasis.
Yeah, I think there's music throughout, obviously. And the text plate thing, I think there's only like a couple in the whole movie. Yeah. There's three or something like that.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, highly recommend it.
Yeah, it's wicked.
I'll think about it.
No, you'll do it.
David, give us another one.
My other top movie of the decade, Grand Budapest Hotel.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
I'm not a huge Wes Anderson person. I think a lot of his movies are really good and some are just okay. But this is easily my favorite. I think it's by far the one that has the most charm and heart while still retaining his like trademark style. But his style never gets in the way of telling the story. I find the characters super engaging. I get engaged in like what they're doing, what the drama is, the tension. And I like... really care about Ralph Fiennes' character.
Ralph Fiennes.
God, I never know how to say it.
Yeah, what does he find? You know, for a movie that's charming and all that, it's still a huge blockbuster. Like, it still has huge set pieces and effects and visuals and stuff.
Yeah, and I just love like how he uses his style to have these huge things, but then also miniatures, and like it's like talking about like Nazi Germany, but like it's kind of in abstract terms. And it's a movie that does a lot without like bashing you in the face with it. And it's just really a pleasant movie to watch, but it made me feel things and it's so beautiful to watch. And I really like that movie.
Wes Anderson's movies for me do like a really good job of juxtaposing. it's a lot, big word.
Four syllables.
Juxtaposing these kind of like lighthearted, quirky environments and characters with like deeper themes. And
totally.
I'll say this. It was the first Wes Anderson movie I ever saw. Still the only one I've ever seen.
But
I know. I liked it, though. I was like, that's what this guy does.
Jameson.
I really want to see. He did Life Aquatic, right?
Yep.
I never saw that movie. I've
seen people.
Life
Aquatic. It's not as
good. I see the Halloween costumes every year. Yeah. I wanted to see
Royal Tannenbaums.
Yeah, that one. That one.
Fantastic Mr. Fox.
That might be my second favorite.
Yeah.
I thought that one sucked.
No, it's excellent.
No, it's great. They're all great.
Oh, no, that one's good. It's the Isle of Dogs.
No, it's not. Doesn't suck. It's pretty good. It's not as good.
What, Isle of Dogs?
Yeah, it's charming and lovely. It struggles a little bit with too much style and not enough, like,
story. Is that Wes Anderson?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
And some people didn't like it because they feel like it was, like, kind of appropriating Japanese culture. Mm. But because
it takes place in Japan?
Yeah, and they're Japanese dogs. And yeah.
Neo-Tokyo.
They're all Shiba Inus.
It's the... I wish. They're... It's in the future?
Near future, where they ban dogs.
That's kind of the first time.
And then
they
send them all to a separate island. And so people didn't like how language was handled, where the dogs speak English and the Japanese people speak Japanese.
Oh, right.
And so that became a point of contention and kind of soured people's
the
opinion.
Japanese
of the movie.
Stole our dogs. That's an American's talking. They didn't, of course.
Riley, give me your second movie.
Oh, okay. I was going to keep talking.
I know.
About Japanese dogs. Lots to say about that.
Wow, such dog.
Annihilation.
Oh.
Okay.
You seen it?
Yeah, it's a great movie.
That was one of the few movies where after watching it, I was just kind of like, my body was just languishing. I watched it in a bed in a hotel room in Taiwan.
Oh, those are odds stacked against the movie.
What, really?
Yeah, to watch it like,
oh,
in a
on
hotel?
My laptop, yeah.
Yeah,
on a laptop, yes.
Yeah.
Whoa.
But I think it actually kind of helped it because I like turned all the lights off.
Were you wearing a robe?
Like, no, I was not wearing a robe. It was hot. But like, I turned all the lights off and I just like put on headphones and I was just like watching it by myself. Like, and it was like perfect. I loved it. My body felt great afterwards. What does that mean? I meant that to say that it kind of like takes something out of you in a good way where you're just like, oh, wow, what a journey, you know, and now it's over. I almost like wanted to immediately watch it again.
Had a really satisfying ending.
Yeah. Also, awesome example of female representation in terms of like a big blockbuster movie that no one really talked about.
Oddly low key. It never made
I think
the
it
news.
Happened. I don't know when the Ghostbusters came out, the Ghostbusters remake.
I believe that was before.
That's but my everyone next was choice.
Like, oh, but everyone was like, girl, don't reboot things with girls. But then this movie came out and it's like,
but it's not a reboot.
It's not a reboot, but it, I don't know. There was a bunch of stuff in the discourse.
But super cool in that it's sci-fi and there's a lot of female ass-kicking led. And weapons. Yeah. It was like they just rolled the dice. It was like 50-50. Like, should these be women or men?
Yeah.
Like, it didn't matter.
Well, I think it informed the characters, like, the for fact sure. that they were women instead of men. But, like, yeah.
I mean, it necessarily would.
In a good way, and it was amazing. Loved it. What'd you guys think?
I think the ending was really wicked. It's weird. Nobody here, you guys didn't put Ex Machina on your list, did you?
No.
Okay, that movie?
It's on my list.
I think that movie's a little overrated.
Overrated?
I think it's pretty good.
Because it's for Alex Garland?
I think that movie's kind of in the same realm as Annihilation. Is that fair?
Who did Annihilation? I think it was
For some reason, they're like in the same like little category in my mind.
I need to look it up. It's Alex Garland.
What does that mean?
Same director.
Same director. Yeah, that makes sense then.
Writer and I don't know whether he directed it or not, but he wrote it. And he also did Sunshine and Ex Machina and Good Stuff.
Wait, Good Stuff, is that a movie?
Yep.
Sunshine, isn't that
I seriously
Boyle?
Don't know right now.
What? Isn't he wrote it. Oh, he wrote it. Okay. Danny Boyle directed. Yep. Yeah, Alex Garland is one of those people in the industry that like every time he's attached to anything, I'm like, ooh. Because Ex Machina, Annihilation, Sunshine.
Oh, you know who I have for that? The people involved in my next movie.
Oh, wait.
You have more to say?
Well,
come on.
You guys didn't even talk about Annihilation at all, and I loved it so much.
I haven't seen it.
Do you think a movie's about cancer?
Yeah, in a way. I mean, I don't want to spoil it for people who haven't seen it. I mean, you should see it.
This is a spoiler podcast.
Okay, fine.
Wait, you haven't seen it?
I haven't seen it. Oh, I'm sorry. I apologize.
Yeah. So I don't want to spoil it, but like, yeah, it's definitely, there's a cosmic horror element to it that is just like, it makes you just kind of the reptile part of your brain just like shut down and like, like cower in fear at like the unknown.
Cool.
Brilliant.
Yeah. It's also one of those cool movies where there's like, they use some visual effects, but they use them sparingly and kind of.
Right.
In low lighting conditions and stuff that makes it look better. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they like hid enough of the, like the weird fantastical stuff that when they do show it to you, you're like, whoa.
And it's cool too because the thing they're the thing they're up against isn't like malicious. It's just like it's just weird. So like you're interested and curious and intrigued, but you're not really scared, but there is a sense of kind of dread and it like uncomfortable.
It doesn't want to kill it because it's malicious. It just killed that's just its nature.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You should see it, dude. It's pretty cool.
It's on my list. After this conversation, I'm gonna see it more.
Put this on your list, Riley, probably because you haven't seen this movie.
Oh.
The Master.
What? I want to see it. I never saw
what?
It.
David, you don't think I should have picked that movie?
No, there's so many better PTA films.
Paul Thomas Anderson.
I love Paul Thomas Anderson. And I love, this was the movie for me, I think, where I was like, whoa, Joaquin Phoenix is like the best.
He is the best.
He's like one of the best living.
He's like amazing.
He's like the best living actor that hasn't gotten canceled. Rip Kevin Spacey. Rip.
Yeah.
And Jake Gyllenhaal. That guy's awesome too. But Amy Adams is in this movie. Did who do?
Boogie Nights.
Oh, There Will Be Blood.
Yeah.
Who? Paul Thomas Anderson? Yeah. He also did like, yeah, Boogie Nights and Magnolia.
Yep.
And wow. I was actually kind of disappointed with his last two movies, which were Inherent Vice and Phantom Thread. I was like stoked for both of them, especially Phantom Thread, because I love Daniel Day-Lewis.
Mm.
And Daniel Day-Lewis was meeting with Paul Thomas Anderson again, first time since There Will Be Blood. And I was like,
so,
and then it was just okay.
What specifically did you like about The Master?
You've seen it?
No.
Okay.
But you can spoil it.
It's cool.
We're trying not to spoil it for people.
I don't know. The Master is sick. It has Philip Seymour Hoffman in it before he died, which is way better than casting an actor after the
dead. I forgot that he died.
He's dead, buddy.
Oh, no.
He's wicked in that movie. He basically plays L. Ron Hubbard.
Right.
Because the movie's about Scientology, but it never says it.
It's about a religion like Scientology.
It's Scientology.
Yeah. Oh, like they're on a boat and
Right.
Yeah, it's sick. It's one of those movies.
Scientology's all about boats. So.
It is.
Weird strings of scenes.
Okay.
There's scenes where you're like, what is this scene? Why did they put this in? What is happening to the character in this scene? Like, there's tons like of rewatch movie.
I like being confused.
No, it's not confusion. It's just like layered. It's layered.
See, layer cake. I'll agree that's the best Paul Thomas Anderson film this decade, because, like, you're right, Inherent Vice and Venom Thread are okay.
There Will Be Blood is my favorite of his, but it's like 2008. Yeah.
I like Boogie Nights and Punch Drunk Love better. What I didn't like about The Master is that it feels so self-indulgent. It feels so long for the sake of being long. And there's so many of these extended shots that it didn't feel like they needed to be there. It could have been a more efficient film. Like, I think that movie would be served like with a 20-minute cut.
I never felt like that, but I do feel like that in some movies. Like, one of my biggest disappointments this year, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood by Tarantino.
For sure.
Love Tarantino. That movie's like, dude, 45 minutes out of there.
Yeah. I will say the performances in The Master are like
masterful.
Amy Adams as well. They're all excellent. Like, they're so believable in this world. And there's really interesting scenes. You're right. Like, some of the drama and some of the scenes is so interesting. I remember there's like a party scene and like everyone's getting naked or something. And like, it just really stuck with me as like a weird, like, nightmarish scene.
Yeah, but it's a disturbing movie. Yeah.
And so it's really incredible. I just didn't enjoy it, I guess.
Well, yeah, it is one of those ones where like,
that's how you know it's art.
Yeah. There's a lot of my picks actually they have antagonists or anti-hero kind of characters. You're like, you're the protagonist, but I don't really like you, but you're interesting. If you're a movie viewer who watched The Joker and you liked Joaquin Phoenix there, but you don't have a lot of exposure to him, this movie is like...
This is the prequel.
Yeah. Joaquin's Joker is a lot like the performance.
I never thought about that, but you're right. It's a very similar
If I hadn't
style.
Seen The Master, I wouldn't have been stoked to see Joaquin as the Joker. I knew because of The Master. I knew because of The Master that he could go Joker
places. Joaquin Phoenix's character is kind of like... disturbed and has mental problems and whatnot.
He's kind of a fuck up.
Okay.
Trying to do his best.
That's who his character is in The Joker,
I think a better Joaquin movie is Her. Not on my list, but I enjoyed that one a lot more. I feel like it's a more interesting concept that relates more to our current stuff, but we'll talk about it more later in one of the categories.
I love that movie.
Her's a great movie.
Yeah.
The Master is better, though. The cinematography and shit, because it's PTA.
You think Her is better than The Master?
It's different. I think I'd rather, right now, if you were like, gun to my head, pick a movie to watch right now, I would for sure pick Her.
Yeah.
It's hard to argue with the cinematography and like the master class of filmmaking that The Master is.
Question.
Yeah, what do you have to watch? You have to pick, you have a question. I have a question. I'm going to go first. You have to watch one of those movies once every 3 years. What do you pick?
Ooh, that's harder. That's interesting. Probably Her.
Like, maybe you want to see Her twice more than you want to see The Master twice, but which one do you want to see 15 times?
Okay, fine. The Master.
I would watch Her 1.5 times and then switch to The Master for 3/4.
Which quarters? Okay, what was your question? What was your question?
The long, slow shots in The Master. You cited that as something that you liked in Blade Runner 2049, not on this podcast, but previously in our discussions.
I'll cite that again later in this podcast.
Okay.
Oh. It's not necessarily a bad thing. It's when too much of the film is... You have to like interpret what the actor is feeling based on what is happening by a look.
You're right. There's a lot of that in that movie. There's just like silence.
And it's really well done. Like, it's as good as that kind of filmmaking gets. It's just not like a movie you're going to be like, I'm so engaged. It's like, I just felt myself worrying about the time a lot in that movie.
See, what I was going to say, that's an interesting answer. But what I was going to say is that long, slow shots maybe are more interesting in a movie like Blade Runner 2049 because it's a sci-fi movie. And you're kind of like... Is an alien going to come up at any second? It's like, duh, we're panning across an
expanse. You think a long, slow shot has to do with suspense?
Well, no, not necessarily.
That's part of it, though. I think that's an element of what makes a long, slow shot suspense is like good, is that it's telling a story and you're not sure where it's going to end.
Right.
When it's one static shot or one slow pan and you know what's happening the whole time, there's no tension, there's no release.
Right.
So what do you think about 2001 Space Odyssey when you have shots that, like, it's just a ship on, like, a platform that's lowering
for
like 35 seconds.
The cultural value of 2001 Space Odyssey, but that's again not a movie I'm going to want to rewatch every 5 years.
Like, it's one of my favorite movies.
And it's like it's a really important film. It's not a movie I put on because I'm like, you know, I just want to like sit back, enjoy a movie. Like,
throw on 2001, relax.
Check out those monkeys,
get some chips.
You're gonna
see. I would say the long slow shots in 2001. To me, those are pregnant with possibility and meaning because it's like the whole movie is kind of about this cosmic horror sort of situation where we don't really know what's going on. Mm. There's a mystery happening, rogue AIs, extra dimensional entities. Like, so you have a really slow shot and you're like, okay, but I'm still thinking about all this stuff that's going on. Whereas in a scenario like The Master, where it just takes place in the real world, it's just kind of like this slow shot is just a slow shot.
See, I'm coming from a whole different place. I'm thinking like for both of them, it's about eye candy. Like in 2001, it's just those miniatures are wicked and it's shot in this like giant large format 70 millimeter film.
Yeah.
And it's a super high def. It still holds up today. And they put so much effort into it. It's like, I'm going to make you look at this for 25 seconds because it's just so
But I think that's lame because like I don't, because like I think there is stuff in 2001 and there is definitely shots in The Master that like warrant those like minute long takes. That one shot of him on the top of the mast with everything happening below, that's like such
Which
an
movie?
In The Master.
Okay.
Where he's like, it's like a close up on Joaquin Phoenix, but you can see the rest of the ship. A beautiful shot and it tells a story from frame one to the last frame. Like it's growing and like what's happening is changing. But in 2001, when it's like literally the like slow shots in space of the space station spinning, to me, that does a lot less.
Mm. Okay, I can agree with that.
Okay, whose turn is
David's
it?
David's number one.
Speaking of long
takes.
No,
it's not number one. It's just one of the three.
Oh, well, I'm going in order. So
oh, jeez.
Speaking of long takes, Blade Runner 2049.
Dude, put it up high. Yeah, it's my number one.
What? No way. Okay, it's not a number one, James.
Okay, whatever. Is it on your list, though?
I'm against podiums.
Is it on your list?
It wasn't on my list, but I liked it.
At all? It's not even in your long list?
I mean, no, it's not.
Wow.
Whatever, what two against one.
Mathematically, we have decided.
All right, David, you tell us why that movie is wicked.
In terms of
you do it.
Executing its vision, it's perfect. I think, like, I can understand why some people think it's long and boring. They're wrong. Every frame in that movie is telling something. Every friggin' second is actually dense with information. It is the most beautiful film ever shot.
Just calm down.
I will not. I don't think there is a movie that has accomplished so many looks, so many styles, so many different scenes, so much lighting
RuPaul's
in one
Drag
film.
Race.
You're right. RuPaul.
One film, okay. One. Yeah.
And like some of those images really stick with you. Like all of the, not Tyrell Corporation, what's the one?
Wallace
Corporation. All the stuff with the water on the walls and the reflections is like.
Mm. Yeah, those locations and sets are wicked in that
so
movie.
So cool. But the use of color, like the desert shot is so good. But then the drama that's happening, there's actually like really interesting things that are happening. Like I love how they set you up to think that maybe he's human and then like they reverse that. Like, oh, it's that dreamer that is. And like the first time I watched that movie, I was like left with so many questions. That movie tells you it's good from the first frame. The second that it's like the huge shot of the solar farm that looks like an eye, I'm like, ooh, this is going to be good. This is going to be interesting.
Oh, yeah, and the
be
sound, good. The score is sweet too. Hans Zimmer.
So good.
Pull up a chair.
Hey, what do you think about the main character by Ryan Gosling being kind of like flat and boring and not saying a whole lot?
I strongly disagree. I think
he
adds a lot of complexity to that because I think he's a replicant and he can't overact, but he does so much with very little where like, in like a way that he's changing his body language and the way that he's like tensing his face and the way that he's responding to things, he gives so much. Like I love those scenes at the police station when he has to report in and they're checking in on his mental health and they're like asking him questions. He has to quickly respond and how it's changing each time they go. And like he gives you a really good performance with so little in that. And he tells you a lot with like what's going on. Oh, I love that movie.
I wish that it, I mean, it would be on my
list.
Wait
a second,
I just didn't put it on.
Riley, didn't you watch it on a plane?
Yeah.
Oh, no,
you watched it once and it was on a plane?
Yeah.
Come over to my house. Come over. I'll make you some food.
I watched a lot of movies on the plane.
This movie's too beautiful to be watched on a plane.
What kind of headphones did you have?
The ones I'm wearing. Probably very similar to the ones I'm wearing now. Audio Technicas.
Riley, okay, I'll pay you an hourly rate to go watch this movie.
I like the movie. Look, it should have been on my list to like straight up. I really
apologize.
I really enjoyed it. I think I watched it and then I heard people saying like, well, first of all, not many people liked it because it didn't do that well in the in the box office. Not many people got roped into it.
There was no way it was going to do well. Well, even the first Blade Runner is so niche that like,
well, it's not even just that. Like, it's a long movie and it's slow. And we just established that David and I like slow,
sometimes.
At least sometimes. So you have to be ready for that.
I like long movies. I think that it could have used a little bit more kind of oomph to pad it out a bit. Like not to pad the length, but to actually physically make it fluffier.
Physically.
Yeah,
like,
to make it fluffier.
Like more action scenes, more.
Yeah,
it's got a butt ton of world building though.
Yeah, and I like that, but I think a lot of the world building is kind of confusing. You're kind of like, wait, so, oh, he's a replicant, and then, wait, so that person was cloned from the other person, that was a kid, okay, wait, these are people came from where?
Wait, does any of that
There's a lot of kind of figuring, what?
That's like plot stuff. When I say world building, I mean like the atmosphere and
I like the world
holograms
building.
And the buildings, and there's no animals. And
I think it's everything.
Okay.
The, you have to take those world details from the things that are happening in the movie. And I think that I don't think the world building necessarily took away from it, but I think that a lot of those details that make it such a rich world are kind of buried under like layers of obscurity where you have to kind of be like following the plot as it's going along. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think I was like super confused, but I think that I would have liked to be less confused than I was.
How about the casting?
Oh, it's dude, really loved good. It.
Love? Yeah. Like the character Love? Creepy. Mm. Oddly beautiful.
Wait, who was
beautiful.
That again?
She's like
the AI?
Love is the antagonist.
Oh, Rappa yeah. She was
like
awesome.
Kicking ass.
Yeah, yeah, she's really good.
Her
yeah,
name but, is Love?
Yeah.
Does she have white hair? That,
no, no, no.
Blonde, dark. Though. No, no, blonde.
Blonde.
The evil one?
Yeah.
No, it's dark hair.
Oh, God. Have I seen this movie?
What?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, there she is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But she was
man,
so...
She just strikes...
She other movies?
She, like, strikes you like an albino, yeah. Kind of, though.
When
she's got that kind of, like...
She's very replicant-looking.
Like, striking look.
Oh, you know who else is in this movie? Is the Terminator.
Oh,
The
Mr. Terminator.
They're not the actual Terminator. Grace from Terminator 4,
oh, yeah.
The one that we or Terminator 6 or whatever
yeah,
we just watched.
Yeah, she's the prostitute.
Yeah.
Oh, is she?
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and that's such a cool scene. Like, I've never seen that in a movie before where it's like, okay, what's this idea of like loving AI hologram? What's and they explore it in such an interesting way where there's like all these scenes
that
of that.
That's pretty
cool.
So,
and
then like,
the hold on, that almost
scene.
Needs explanation
yes,
where it's like
do.
The main character has an AI, kind of like in the movie Her, and he has like a relationship with her, but she's disembodied. But then he buys her a gift that allows her to like make a hologram of herself, or
she already
has
but she
that.
Can't leave her house.
She's on a track in yep. The house anyway, yep. So she can have a hologram body,
but then you can't touch that.
He gets a prostitute to come over and they superimpose the hologram over the prostitute's body.
No, she gets the prostitute to come over. It's her decision to be like, hey, I want to make love to you, but I don't have a body.
Yeah. And it's like, it's just a very visually cool thing.
Yeah.
You can see like the hologram has some kind of latency and it's kind of trying to track onto the body of the real person. And
that was
looked
that
really
was,
cool.
That was a really cool sci-fi
concept.
Man, and that in terms of like special effects and like visual effects, that's still unmatched. Like the way that they use practical effects and then slightly augment it with like computer graphics, it's unbelievable. It looks so real.
You know,
it's so good.
There's a scene where somebody's walking around in town and then there's a giant hologram projection. It's actually it's the same as the girl that he's in love with, the AI, but it's like she's a product. So
yeah.
Lots of people own her.
She's
just
mass-produced.
Part of the Wallace Corporation. And there's like there's a big hologram of her. This is actually in the trailer. And the hologram is like giant size, like King Kong size. And it like kneels down and like starts interacting with the tiny little person.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
That is not VFX.
What?
Like, that's not computer effects.
How do they do
it's
that?
Actually, they just use projectors.
What are you talking about?
They did it practically.
What?
It looks
yes.
So
that's
good.
Not right.
It's true.
I don't believe.
Look it up later.
I'll think about it.
I'll eat my hat.
And we'll film it.
Okay, Riley, Mr.
True
to well, well, I wish I started with this one now because I feel like you guys are going to be, what's the word?
We're never.
Not is it impressed. Cats?
It's Cats. No, I haven't seen Cats. Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
Yeah, yeah.
I know that it's not a. Well, it is an artsy movie though. That's
oh, it's
the
totally
thing,
artsy. It's artistic.
It was a complete breakthrough. Not a breakthrough, but like a milestone in animation. Like, if you watch, I've watched some kind of behind the scenes documentaries on how they did everything, and it was just like. It was mind-blowing. Mm-hmm.
They changed the art style to have harmony with what's going on with characters.
Right.
They have, like, Spider-Man as a kid at a lower frame rate
yes.
than his analog who's older, who's, like, proficient Spider-Man.
Right.
So that the kid looks clunkier and choppier beside the
yeah.
master.
It's
like,
pretty
that's
brilliant.
Awesome.
But then it also kind of gives it, like, this, like, stop-motion-y kind of, like, retro feel. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and they do that with a lot of different things in the universe. Some
and
are
they,
smooth,
they
some are
choppy. They
integrate
comic book elements with little yep. like sound effects being in their own little like thought bubble cloud things.
Yeah, and so there's the visual aspect, and then there's also just like the writing, the humor in it is top tier for me. The character development, I cried a little bit in the theater yeah. during like certain reveals. Just top tier, not even just popcorn movie. Like, it's a popcorn movie, but it's like a popcorn movie with substance.
Would you say it's the best Spider-Man movie of all time?
I would say that.
Would you say it was the best superhero movie of the decade?
Yeah.
Ah!
I can't think of one. I can't think of a one that I like.
Like, it's better than Infinity War?
No, it's not better than... Or wait, sorry. Infinity War is not better than this. Mm-hmm. It is better than Infinity War for me. Because Infinity War had... Like, as a singular movie. I think if you think about Infinity War in the context of the larger MCU, like, it is an achievement. It is is amazing. You go into that movie. You're not going there to watch a movie. You're going to finish the saga that you've been watching this entire time. So, within context... I don't think you can compare them because Spider-Verse didn't get a chance to be the same. But like as a singular movie, I think Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse is the best superhero movie of the last decade.
It's hard to fight. It's hard to disagree with that.
You watch that movie, you become an evangelist for that movie. Yeah. That's exactly how I saw it. Someone I know saw it, maybe you guys actually, and were like, it's so wicked. I've seen it twice now.
Yeah.
And then you go watch it, and then you have to tell all your friends. You're like, honey, you have to come with me to see this
cartoon,
this kid show, because it's the best movie I've seen all year.
Yeah,
I think it's a movie that suffers a little bit on rewatch. The first time I watched it was the best time, and it got progressively, not worse, just like slightly less awesome.
I have put it on at my home, and it's not as good as the theater.
Yep.
The theater experience was great for that one.
No. It's unbelievable, and I don't want to take any away from that movie, because it's one of the best animated movies, one of the best superhero movies, one of the best movies in general. Like, it's an excellent movie.
Similarly, kind of like a body trip to when I did Annihilation,
What are you talking about, body trip?
I took
trip?
Annihilation. You know, like, I guess it's like drugs. It's like you go in there and it's just kind of like, whoa, I'm, it's like ASMR a little bit, you know, where you kind of get the tinglies, body tinglies.
The room goes silent.
They had to destroy the chair after he left the theater.
You don't know what I'm talking about? You don't get body tinglies when you watch a really good movie?
Like when you're done peeing and you kind of shiver?
Yeah. Yes. Tree of Life. Did you see that?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
I love that movie.
So I watched that in the theater, and it wasn't even the movie itself that gave me the body tingles, but it was the...
it was the cookie you ate two hours before.
Ooh! It was the those like shots of space and nebula kind of like
never
exploding,
seen it like
that. Like with the orchestral score ramming its way through my brain.
That if I had a religion, that would be my religion. It's the tree of life.
It's like, oh,
yeah. David, you had a bunch
transcendental.
Of
so we're gonna do
rapid
some
fire
rapid
questions.
Fire categories. So what is the best turn off your brain movie of the 2010s?
Oh,
okay.
I'm gonna go first. Mine is the Mission Impossible series of 2010. So Mission Impossible 4, 5, 6. They are better than Bond, which is a big thing because I love James Bond. Mm. But
wait, really?
This decade,
really, you love it? Or
you love James Bond?
Yeah, we're gonna get into that. James Bond's coming out in April. We'll
you
talk
never
about
even
it
met
then.
The guy.
Hey, and it's just like a fun romp with the best stunts in history, and so it's just a great like. Don't think about it too hard. Just enjoy a movie.
I mean, series. We're talking about best. Turn your brain off and enjoy it. Series.
I cheated. It's supposed to be a movie. But
it's supposed to be one movie. Because if it was a series, I would say the MCU.
Sure.
Because like. That's the
turn off your brain and enjoy the MCU. That's
actually, amazing. Yeah, I agree with that. I think Infinity War.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wasn't stoked on it.
Yeah. Infinity War, you have to engage your brain a little bit because it's like, wait, what's going on? And then he's going over here and then putting the gem in his face and trying to take it out.
It depends on the brain, I guess.
All right. Dave, what movie or piece of content do you think had the best world building?
Star Wars.
Oh, my God. Best world building?
I can go first.
Yeah, you made these, obviously.
Yeah,
I sent them to you. You were supposed to pick them.
I didn't do that one.
I chose The Dark Crystal, Age of Resistance.
I knew you were going to do
that. Because it's the best. It's such a cool world. And, like, there's not often that you get, like, a fully crafted world. And this one's not original. It's a movie, and then it became novels. And then that's what it is. But, like...
So, wait, this is, like, a 2019 series on Netflix.
Yes.
It's got puppets.
Yep.
Yeah, I watched a couple episodes.
And everything's handcrafted, and, like... I really like the fantasy of the world. I think sometimes the drama is really subverted, or not subverted, but undercut by the fact that they're puppets, where they're two puppets operated by hands emoting at each other.
Especially when it's 4K, you're like, that's a puppet.
Yeah, but sometimes things just look so beautiful. And like, you can't, computers aren't able to do real life better than puppets. And puppets, like, there's a magic about it. The Skeksis, which are like the evil characters, they're like bird looking.
They're
evil.
Gross.
They're the best embodiment of evil I've ever seen in a movie. Like, I would, like, argue that I've never seen a better visualization and, like, personification of what evil is than the Skeksis.
Have you seen How the Grinch Stole Christmas?
Oh, dang.
Wait, it's a movie?
It's a TV show.
It's a series, like 10 episodes or something.
That's not a movie.
I'm just...
He said content.
I cheated again.
Yeah, just cheese.
You know what,
guys? I made these categories. I'll
say,
do what I want.
When you say world building, do you mean like you like the way that they built up this fictional world, like with all the details and stuff?
Yeah,
or are you talking about something that kind of like sucks you in?
A bit of both.
I think world building is like just the depth. Like you can just see that they thought of everything. Like Children of Men would be on my list, except it came out like in 2006 or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that movie, it's like there's always a TV screen in the background at the bar that the main character is in that has like a news report happening with the things crawling on the screen, like the like text that scrolls by when you're watching the news and just has all this stuff happening. You're like, this exists. This is a time
period.
When
did that one come out?
Like 2006, I think.
It's 2006.
Oh, okay. Yeah, pre this decade.
Yep.
There's so many good movies.
I don't think I have an answer for that.
Best world building?
Best world building.
You know what I do
your
have?
Default to Blade Runner 2049.
I do have a list of biggest disappointments.
Let's do biggest disappointments then. James, start us off.
I don't want to get caught up on a lot of these, but okay. I'm going to lead up to my biggest one. Vice. I was really stoked for Vice because I love Christian Bale and I liked the... I like the Big Short.
Oh,
the Big Short was wicked. Right. Yeah, and Vice, I was like, hell yeah. He looks like Dick Cheney. This is sick.
Right.
And he was good in it, but the movie overall sucked.
Never saw it.
Me neither. Look, Barn.
Lion King, I didn't see, but by all accounts.
And Aladdin and Beauty and the Beast.
The entire DC movies, the universe.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Except Shazam.
Probably the biggest disappointment for everybody has got to be The Force Awakens. Well, set the bar nice and low for the whole trilogy.
I wouldn't call it the biggest disappointment. Force Awakens wasn't a disappointment. It was like, okay, yeah, pretty good.
That's the tone of voice you use when you're disappointed. When you waited 10 years or whatever.
No, but I think most people went into that movie being cautious because it was the first movie since the prequels, the first Star Wars movie. And we were like, okay, the last Star Wars movies that we got were horrible. Maybe it's a magic formula that you can't replicate, you know?
Maybe it's going to be amazing. J.J. Abrams, practical effects, Disney. Maybe it's going to be so sick. The trailer was pretty good.
People had like secret hope. It was like...
A new hope.
Yeah. I'm going to hope that it was good, but I'm not going to expect that it's good because we've been hurt before. We were hurt.
And then when it came out, people liked it. And it's just that kind of because of Last Jedi, fans turned against it. And then because of Rise of Skywalker, everybody turned against it.
I was disappointed. But let me tell you what my biggest disappointment of the whole decade was. Fanboys, get at me. Interstellar.
Oh.
Really?
Oh.
Biggest disappointment?
Dude, I love Christopher Nolan. I love the Batman series. I love everything he did in between. I love The Prestige. I love Inception. It's on my list of maybe one of my top three. It almost made it in. I love Christopher Nolan. I saw that he was doing Interstellar. I was high on Matt McConaughey at the time.
I was snorting him.
True Detective was coming out.
Yeah.
True Detective was out and he was like, whoa, Matt McConaughey, like everyone loves him now.
He's a serious actor.
He's getting together with Chris Nolan. They're making another awesome movie in between Batman movies. It's going to be like 2001 Space Odyssey, but with new graphics. They worked with all these scientists. And you know what? This movie pretty much sucked. Everything that happened on Earth, I hated.
What?
Until he went to the fourth dimension at the end of the movie, I was like, okay, they kind of saved it.
But you didn't like Interstellar at all?
I haven't seen it since the theater.
What the heck?
I don't really like it. I will watch it again.
I liked Interstellar.
Let's watch it together. I've never watched it. I've been waiting for a moment.
You haven't even seen it?
I've been waiting for like a spiritual moment in my life to watch it and get like exceptionally out of my mind to watch it.
Well, I have an OLED now, so let's do it.
That's what
David,
I meant.
You rewatch movies a million times.
I own Interstellar. And I constantly am like, is today the day? Is today the day
what?
That I pull the trigger and watch Interstellar?
No, I'm going to watch a Disney movie again.
Yeah.
Why?
I don't know. There's something about it that I'm like, I think I've made it too monolithic in my life. Mm. And now I'm scared of watching
When's your birthday?
March 26th.
Let's watch on your birthday.
Sure, let's do it.
All right.
Jeez Louise.
Wald.
Grindelwald.
You don't even.
You just can't take it for granted that you know Harry Potter names.
Biggest disappointment.
Guys,
they didn't even get the name right.
Cherry Blotter 6.
Yeah. I really like the first Fantastic Beasts. It's a very flawed movie, but it felt like a movie that a lot of thought, imagination, and love went into. Like, I think the world building they did to expand on the universe shows kind of like cool sides of magic. I thought all the creatures were really well designed. I liked the characters. I thought it was a good setup. I'm like, I want more of this.
The first one.
From the opening, like line of the second movie, something was off. Like it starts with them breaking out Johnny Depp from like a flying horse, and like that whole sequence is so bad.
As soon as they hired Johnny Depp, something was off.
Well, you know, honestly, yeah, you're right. When in the first movie they reveal that Colin.
Oh no, wait,
what's his name?
What's
Colin,
the character?
Bullseye. Colin.
Doesn't matter.
Bullseye. Whatever. Colin Farrell.
Colin Farrell.
Yeah.
Is actually Johnny Depp in disguise, and that he's been here the whole time. That was a bad moment.
Johnny
that
Depp's
was...
been here the whole time.
He walks out of the shadows.
Savvy?
I Johnny Depp, have been here the whole time.
It's a 40 experience.
I've got cameras all over my house.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was, I should have known. It was my fault. I shouldn't have been excited. But he's a terrible villain, and he's so lazy in this movie. He does nothing new that we haven't seen 100 times. All the characters are off. There's two characters in particular that really offended me how bad they were. Jacob and Queenie, where they fall in love in the first one, and their love is very sweet and sincere. And at the end of the first one,
they wipe his memory.
The Muggle character loses his memory, but when he sees her, you can kind of see it's coming back.
Yeah.
And this movie starts with him under the Imperious curse, brainwashed to love her. And I'm like, why are they doing this? This is not at all how
I
this should be.
That.
And it's just like so silly. It's set in Paris in the 1920s, which is one of the coolest times in history. Mm. And they do nothing about it. You forget about it. I'm like, was it in New York? Was it in that? I had to look it up.
Oh, wow.
Why is Jude Law Dumbledore? Why the fuck is Jude Law Dumbledore?
Oh, I was going to cut you off, but now I'm really getting into this. I haven't seen it, but now I hate it too.
I have not seen it
There's
either.
There's so many extra scenes that should have been cut.
Why is Jude Law Dumbledore?
He's terrible.
I love
choice.
Jude Law.
He's a terrible choice Dumbledore. For Dumbledore.
But there's also the fact that, well, isn't this like not that long before?
It's
oh
like
no,
50
it's in the
years.
It's in the 20s.
20s. So yeah, I guess it's like.
And 70, when does Harry 80s? Potter start?
90s. Well, I don't know if the movies start, but the books start in the 90s.
I guess he would be, but he looks like 150 or something in freaking.
I don't know.
He's a smoker. A lot of whiskey. Yeah.
I don't want to say too much more. This is, in my opinion, maybe the worst movie of the decade.
Oh my God. Hey, any other questions? You had some Oscar related ones. Should we do
that? Oh yeah. What is the biggest Best Picture steal? So what that means is, which movie won the Oscar for Best Picture and ousted a way better film?
This is a question for someone who pays a lot more attention to Oscars than I do.
I don't really, but I do have one. I have a couple Oscars instances that like stood out to me over the past few years. And I remember 2018 being a bogus year, man. Check this out.
Freaking
the
bogus.
Winner of Best Picture was Shape of Water, a movie that I did not. I rarely don't like movies, and I was in that theater like this.
Really?
Wait,
I like that movie.
I don't like Shape of Water, and I like Guillermo del Toro. I like his movies. Yep. I like his other stuff. But check out the roster he was against. That movie was against: Call Me by Your Name, Darkest Hour, Dunkirk, Lady Bird, Phantom Thread.
Oh dang!
Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. I've seen all of those. They were all better than Shape of Water. And then there's The Post, which I didn't see. That's, like
see,
Dunkirk was way better.
I don't think all of those are better. Dunkirk is definitely better. Dunkirk, I think, should have won.
Get Out, by the way. Get Out.
Oh, you're right. Get Out 2. That's an excellent movie.
Get Out is one of my honorable
mentions.
That's the one.
Yeah.
I haven't seen Shape of Water because it looked silly.
It's all right.
But I liked I like Guillermo del Toro. I think it was something that I was like, maybe I'll rent that later.
Nah, don't bother.
But I wasn't like,
you know what is cool is that the main character is mute.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, I think they do a lot with that.
That was interesting.
Can the fish guy talk?
No. Well, he can like force talk.
Oh, so that's why they connect?
Sort of.
That's a stupid movie. You know what?
It's a metaphor.
Another year that was dumb was the Best Supporting Actor choice of 2016. I'm sure you remember well. That was the year. I pay attention anytime Christian Bale is up for anything.
Yeah.
Because I dick ride Christian
Psycho.
Bale all the time.
Geez.
Now, I wasn't too upset that he didn't win Best Supporting this year for his portrayal of Michael Burry in The Big Short, because he had already won Best Supporting in 2011 for The Fighter,
which is
a wicked movie.
So good.
That's in 2011. That should be in your short list. The Fighter is a sweet movie. I mean, the only problem with that movie is that it's the main character is Mark Wahlberg and not Christian Bale. But
sort of, but you need the straight man for Mark Wahlberg to play against.
You need that. But anyway, Mark Rylance, who's a great actor, won Best Supporting for Bridge of Spies. And I knew that fact before I saw the movie Bridge of Spies, okay? Then I watched the movie and I was like, he doesn't even do anything in this movie. He's got like three lines in this movie. He mostly just sits there.
I think it's because there was a few nominations from Big Short. And when there's a couple from the same movie, no.
But check this out, dude. He's against Mark Ruffalo of Spotlight. Spotlight won Best Picture that year. He's against Sylvester Stallone somehow.
Heck yeah.
But who cares?
In
but
Creed?
Notably, he's against Tom Hardy in The Revenant. Who,
notably. Oh, boo. He should have won.
Tom Hardy was wicked in The Revenant. He was better than DiCaprio.
Easily.
And DiCaprio won his Oscar finally.
But he didn't eat a raw buffalo liver.
Tom Hardy's better than everyone.
What are you talking about?
Leo DiCaprio. He eats that raw liver.
Oh, and Tom Hardy didn't.
I don't know.
DiCaprio actually did on set?
Yeah, he actually ate the real one.
Oh, he thought that would get him the best actor.
Well, it did.
Oh, is that the one that got best actor?
But he shouldn't even get best actor for that. Was an award where it was like, he didn't deserve it for this movie, but he deserves it in general, so let's give it to him
now. You get best actor because you put yourself through this ridiculous hardship. Okay, we should say that's one of the greatest sagas of this decade is Leonardo DiCaprio struggling, clawing his way towards an Oscar, trying to get movie after movie as a vehicle to get a freaking best actor.
I would way prefer that he would have won for The Revenant. For Django Unchained, I think that's the movie I would have given it to him for. I think he was so interesting.
He wasn't a lead, though.
Yeah, he wasn't lead.
No, but just supporting. That's fine. He can have either or.
I don't think he would have been happy with best supporting.
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, I think he's way better than The Revenant.
What about Wolf of Wall Street? I know you don't like that movie, he did a good job.
He's fine.
I don't know. On the Quaaludes, he's trying to move around.
That just feels like Leo being Leo. It doesn't feel like he brought something special to it.
Okay. Tom Hardy, The Revenant, wicked.
Did you guys see Hunt for the Wilder People? Put it on your list. That was Taika Waititi's kind of like, well, it wasn't his first movie, but it was like, it was kind of the thing that got him mainstream attention, I think.
Yep.
Hunt for the Wilder People. So good.
My, I want to do one more category. Most overrated film of the decade.
Endgame.
Overrated?
What a hater.
I'm not the only one who doesn't like Endgame that much. When I went home, I went on Reddit and a lot of people were like, on Endgame.
I think it's a lot less good where, like, Thanos is so much less interesting in the second one where he's just pure evil.
Lots of things suck. I didn't like the going back in time scenes. The Hulk sucked in this movie.
The time heist was great.
I liked
it. Yeah, whatever. Oh, the pacing and the tone shifts at the beginning were awful. Like,
how the heck did you watch The Rise of Skywalker and give it an 8.5 out of 10, but you don't like Endgame?
I told you this last time. It's because Infinity War, which I watched 2 days before, was a good movie. Good. And that's not true.
But they're just totally different. They're kind of like different movies.
Whatever, man. That's my pick. Other than that, Okja. F Okja. I don't like it. I hate Okja. I'll fight anybody who likes it.
It's fine. I don't hate that movie. It's a little gratuitous in how much it's like, see how much suffering this animal loves? You love this animal. Watch it suffer.
Dude, I'm a vegetarian and I don't even care about that movie, man. Like,
I didn't
Jake Gyllenhaal, I'm like, what are you doing?
Yeah, I love Jake Gyllenhaal. What was he doing? Terrible in that movie. Yeah.
He's too wild.
My most overrated movie of the decade, Wonder Woman. That movie is just okay.
Sexist.
Everybody calm down.
Bigot.
It is number 108 on Rotten Tomatoes movies you have to watch. That means it's above Saving Private Ryan, 2001 Space Odyssey, The Lion King, Pulp Fiction, The Lord of the Rings.
Settle down.
The Matrix. Everybody, calm yourself. Wonder Woman is okay. The first two-thirds, fine. The ending is trash. It is a terrible ending.
I had an argument with somebody about this because I feel generally the same way as you do about the movie, but I was trying to justify the reaction that it had because I understand that socioculturally, it was an incredibly important movie.
Yeah.
And the fact that it was like a decent movie with a female superhero lead, it was really one of the first, is it the first? In the modern era, at least. Kind of like female-led superhero movie, and it was good enough to stand right up there. It was hands down the best DC movie we had at the time. At the time, hands down the best one. So like, I'm fine with people hyping it up because just for that context. I agree with you as a movie. If it without that context, it's fine.
Yeah, the last 30 minutes of the movie is so bad, where it undoes everything that is done in the movie. That the fact that her arc is dependent on her falling in love with a man is like the least feminist thing that like this feminist movie could do.
Yeah, there's some problems.
But then I think the worst thing it does is that it actually has the personification of evil. So the movie starts and she leaves her island on the quest to find the god of evil or the god of war because she believes that like, oh, there's actually someone behind the scenes pulling the strings and making these evil people do all these things. But in the end, it's not like the movie kind of makes it seem like, oh, maybe it's just about these people having evil in their heart and like being evil on their own. But in the end, they reveal that there is a god of war. It's Professor Lupin. And then they have to punch each other as hard as they fucking can.
Professor Lupin.
And it's just it's stupid. It's a terrible theme that, yes, there is a god of war that's pulling the strings, that these people are not in control.
So we must punch him.
And then they just punch for like 15 minutes on this terrible looking flaming tarmac. And like,
I can punch.
Yeah. The ending of a movie is super important. And if that movie like utterly fails in the ending, like,
look, guys, there's a lot of stuff we have to get through to get to this all important punching scene. So stay with me. Places. Action.
And that is David's most Kevin Sorbo disappointed moment of the decade.
That's my favorite internet clip of all time.
Well, thank you, everyone, for joining us as we ventured through basically our adolescence from age 20 to 30.
Moana.
Na, na, na.
Cry every time.
Toy Story 4.
Sorry, continue.
Moana, na, na, na. Oh, you're talking to me?
Yeah. Moana.
Well, thanks for listening, guys, and happy new year to you. Yeah. Make sure that you rate the podcast wherever you listen to it. It helps us a lot. Also, hit us up on Twitter, at Carpool Critics. That's the official Twitter. Let us know if there's a podcasting service that you use where our podcast isn't available. I don't know how you're listening to us then, but whatever. We want to make sure we're on every platform. And we also just want to chat with strangers on the internet when we're getting paid by Linus at work during work hours. So please tweet at us.
Yeah, we just want to love you.
Thank you so much.
What?
I just want to love you.
I just want to love you, baby.
Okay.